Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Now, Annie Carney, who covers the Clinton campaign for Politico. James Comey or no, the campaign is in massive get-out-the-vote mode. Remember, the Halloween headline in the media might have been that Election Day is just a week away, but really, it's been Election Day for a while already in battleground states like Florida, Ohio, and North Carolina. Hi, Annie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me.
Are you on the trail today?
I'm off the trail today. I was in Ohio yesterday, and I'm in New York today.
And your Halloween headline was that scaring voters to the polls was not how Hillary Clinton planned to begin the final week before Election Day. Why do you say scaring voters to the polls?
So yesterday she had two rallies in Ohio, in Kent and in Cincinnati, and her message was basically driving home how terrifying it would be to the entire world order to have Donald Trump, who she says doesn't understand the risks of nuclear weapons, complains that why do we even bother having nuclear weapons if we don't use them, how this man could be president. So basically saying, like, this, if you elect Donald Trump, he is likely to get us into a nuclear war. This is a very dark closing argument for a candidate who a few weeks ago was saying, I want to end my campaign the way I started my career, talking about children and families, making a positive argument for electing the first female president, making her still likely election about something more than voters rejected Donald Trump. After the Comey investigation, it seems like if all they're doing to get her in the White House is rejecting Donald Trump, that's just fine. If that's how it's going to happen, they'll do it that way.
Why is that the calculation? Why is the antidote to James Comey's ungraceful announcement, let's call it that, that he's looking at some of Huma Abedin's emails without knowing what they are, that there might be any indication of any wrongdoing without knowing that he went public and, you know, he's getting blowback? But why is the antidote to that to keep attacking Trump rather than close with a positive message?
Well, I think two things. One is that what this Comey issue does, I mean, we don't know what is at play here. The Clinton campaign says it's likely duplicates or no classified information is going to come out. But the whole email issue since the beginning has eroded her trust that voters have in her, and they think that this story keeps changing and that it just adds to her own unfavorability. So to climb out of that hole is harder than to do a comparison with Donald Trump, where she's basically saying, okay, maybe you don't like the way I handled emails, but it's me and my finger on the send button versus Donald Trump's finger on
right.
the red nuclear button.
Sure.
And so if you have to stack it up against them, my sin is little compared to the threat
right.
that he poses. That's why I think that's the, other than like really trying to convince people with 8 days to go that I'm a trustworthy leader on my own.
The Clinton campaign even released a kind of 2016 version of the legendary Daisy ad, as you write about, mm-hmm. used by the Lyndon Johnson campaign against Barry Goldwater in 1964. That ad, for people who've never seen it, was intended to scare people about someone as big of a warmonger as Goldwater was said to be, having his finger on the nuclear button at the height of the Cold War. It shows a little girl pulling petals from a daisy and counting them. That's why it's called the Daisy ad. And then it shifts to someone counting down to the explosion of a nuclear bomb. Here's the audio.
1, 0.
Wow, for those of you who've never seen the Daisy ad, there it was from 1964. And if you didn't see the visual, it's as heavy as it sounds. The little girl in the ad was Monique Louise, and she is back in a new ad just put up by the Clinton campaign. Now she's in her late 50s, I guess, but the theme is revived. The Republican candidate is too irresponsible to trust with nuclear weapons. So the new ad opens with a shot from the original Daisy, Monique Louise as that little girl, and then the modern day Louise speaks.
This was me in 1964. The fear of nuclear war that we had as children, I never thought our children would ever have to deal with that again. And to see that coming forward in this election is really scary.
Trump asked three times.
Why can't we use nuclear weapons?
I want to be unpredictable.
What safeguards are there to stop any president who may not be stable from launching a nuclear attack?
The commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief.
Bomb the shit out of him.
Is this had on TV as well as online, Annie?
Yes, and they just followed this up. They have a two-pronged approach here. They released that ad yesterday, I think, in the battleground states, and today they have an ad quoting Trump with footage from the Trump on the Access Hollywood bus with Billy Bush, quoting him saying, "It's very hard to be a 10 if you're flat-chested. Women shouldn't, wives shouldn't work." All of his misogynistic statements. So this is part two of their closing argument, which is directed at women, hopefully just turning off any women who would possibly vote for him, with another just really negative ad about Donald Trump and his statements about women.
I'm
just curious. This seems to be their most effective tactic. Donald Trump is unfit for office. They're not ending the campaign with a positive ad spot about Hillary Clinton. I don't know how well those work.
Listeners, anything you want to say or ask Annie Carney from Politico about the presidential race, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Let's talk about getting out the early vote. How does the campaign do this on a retail level? Because they are really doing it. I mean, the key swing states are already voting: North Carolina, Florida, Ohio, I think Nevada too, right?
Yes, they have been making a huge early voting push, getting voters to the polls there. I think that they had some, I don't have the number in front of me, but something like in some of the early states, like 40% of people have already voted before the Comey thing came out, which is important to remember that voting has been taking place now for weeks, and a lot of this is already locked up, and so this is not likely to move her margins too much in terms of her path to 270. It seems like they still feel confident that she has a path to win, that this isn't going to be the end of her campaign because of this new revelations from the FBI.
Is it different or more than what Trump is doing?
Yes. I think that's the Clinton campaign has prided itself on a ground game from the early days in the primary, which is why they even eked out a win in Iowa over Bernie Sanders in the primary. Robbie Mook, the campaign manager, is a ground game person. That's his strength. The Trump campaign has literally little ground game at all. He's been parachuting in for big rallies and leaving, and he upended the standard rules of politics in the primary. But I think that there is not much organization. Most of what he has in the states is probably provided to him by the RNC, not by his own campaign.
Cindy in Montclair wants to say something about these negative ads. Hi, Cindy. You're on WNYC.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I don't like to see negative ads, particularly not with my party. However, I do believe that those ads are going to be targeted toward people who have not made their mind up yet. And those are likely to be people who are swayed by misogynistic comments or fear of a war, which I certainly would be. I'm personally a Bernie supporter, although I think he did his job in bringing Hillary to right and left center, because that's where we needed her. But the words that we're using and those ads are his. It's not like we're making stuff up.
Yeah, I think that's right. That from the beginning, I think the Clinton campaign has found that quoting using his own words against him is the most effective weapon. This is what Hillary Clinton did in the debates, which were a huge success for her, was basically just quote Trump back to Trump, that someone else attacking him isn't as good as the holes he seems to dig for himself. In terms of undecided, this being targeted at undecided voters, I think that's probably right. In this kind of election, it's always hard to imagine who at this point is really still undecided, with such well-known and polarizing candidates out there. I think it probably also motivates people who might not be voting. Or in terms of the women ad about his misogynistic statements, I don't know if that's targeted at women who can then convince their entire family to get out there and vote because it matters so much, or just makes them feel, even if they are Hillary supporters, just makes it's, you know, motivating the base to actually get out and vote, not in addition to convincing undecided voters.
On who's undecided, we say, oh, who couldn't have made up their mind by now with all the exposure to these candidates and how polarizing they are. But then you see the ABC Washington Post poll has Clinton up 12 points a week ago. Then on Sunday, she was only up 2 points, you know, and that's kind of an outlier poll for the gap, but it's generally, you know, for the size of the swing, but it's generally a well-respected poll, and other polls are showing some swings too. So somebody's undecided out there.
Yeah. I don't know how to explain it. Is it that they are just, I think people see it as they don't like either candidate, and they think it's choosing between the lesser of two evils, and I hate them both, and so what does it even matter? Both of the candidates have high unfavorable ratings, and again, this is why it would have been helpful for Hillary Clinton to be able to make a positive message in the final weeks of her campaign.
I did see a report that more undecideds are previous Republican and Republican-leaning independents who don't like Trump and figuring out what to do, and the last-minute deciders have been breaking recently for Trump because they're coming from those camps, previous Republican voters and Republican-leaning independents. But I also saw a description on television last night of a pecking order for the Clinton campaign, and I wonder if you've reported on this too, personally contacting voters who may be soft in their support in these early voting states so that they get them to vote before they can change their mind again. First, they go down the list of people identified as soft supporters, like a lot of white college-educated suburban voters who might be going back and forth in their heads and might have landed on Clinton for the moment, say, after the Billy Bush tape or the nasty woman comment. And the Clinton folks have lists of names of people they believe to be in that category. The second group would be the millennial Bernie voters. Get them at the right cycle as they're wavering between Clinton and no one or Clinton and Jill Stein, and get them to the early voting polls and get that vote cast. How much is that what you're seeing?
I think that that is probably the smart decision. I haven't been tracking that.
Yeah.
States. I know that like Hillary has been campaigning in key states with early voting rallies with Michelle Obama in North Carolina, making the case, trying to drive home to these people to like leave the rally and vote right away, trying to make the case that precincts in a state like North Carolina come down to 2 votes or 14 votes, that it really matters, that people can't sit this one home. But I haven't been tracking what you're describing exactly.
Joe on Staten Island, Trump supporter. Hi, Joe. You're on WNYC.
How you doing, Brian? Nice to talk to you. Longtime fan and intrigued by your show. Like it very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I just wanted to state that everybody's talking about the nuclear codes. The fact is the president can't wake up in a bad mood and just nuke somebody. There's a protocol, and even though he's commander-in-chief, he just can't willy-nilly launch a nuke. And I think it's ridiculous to put that out.
Joe, thank you. And in fact, that's what we heard in our last segment from Republican candidate for the North Shore Congressional District, Jack Martins, Andy, who was saying he's going to vote for Trump, but he doesn't endorse Trump, and he gets that there are problems with Trump. But his answer on why he still prefers Trump to Clinton, even with, you know, the enormity of the risks of Trump's psychological makeup and stuff that people have concerns about, is that we have a democracy with checks and balances, and Trump can't just go do stuff for the most part. And so I don't know. Are they using that example, that argument, or are they leaving it to people like Joe on Staten Island to make it for them? I don't hear that coming out of Trump's mouth.
Well, I think that they find that the nuclear issue, I think their internal polling shows that it does damage Trump, that it that this image does make you think that he's just unfit, that, you know, their line, a man you can bait with a tweet doesn't have the temperament to be trusted with nuclear weapons. There's a lot of groups that have run ads featuring his glib comments about nuclear weapons, and they found that my colleague Michael Crowley reported on this, that here, this is a study, men over the age of 30 who watched a video about featuring Trump's comments on nuclear weapons were 7 percentage points more likely to back Clinton over Trump compared to those who did not watch the ad. So they are finding that this does move voters, that this issue does move voters in terms of the details of the logistics of how you actually do launch nuclear weapons. I think that's
right. But they're they're getting into they're tapping into people's feeling or susceptibility to feel that Trump is psychologically unstable and volatile, and this is a genuine risk to our safety.
And then, I mean, just in general, I think polls have found that voters trust Clinton over Trump when it comes to the issue of handling nuclear arms, 46% to 31%. So again, this is another way of getting at Clinton's trust issues from a different angle. You might have problems with her character, but when it comes to the fundamentals of, like, handling nuclear weapons, she beats Trump on the trust issue.
Melody on the Upper West Side, you're on WNYC. Hi, Melody.
Hi, good morning. I heard your commentator say a couple of times that it's unfortunate Hillary Clinton seems to be ending her campaign on this negative note, that is, with a negative approach to her campaigning, focusing on negative things about Trump. And there are a lot of negatives, so I get it. But Trump's campaign, it seems from the very beginning, has focused on negatives with Hillary Clinton. So why doesn't that critique come out more often about him? I'm wondering if your commentator has a thought on that.
I mean, I think you're right. He's attacked Hillary Clinton. He's out there attacking her aide, Huma Abedin, right now. That's fair. I think that, you know, we saw at the Democratic National Convention an attempt to surround Hillary Clinton with a positive vision for the future of the country. Popular politicians like the Obamas, Michelle Obama's famous rallying cry, when they go low, we go high. I think there had been some hope to show, don't tell, about that line, that even if Trump's going to do personal attacks, she could do something that was like they're trying to draw a contrast. His vision of the future of the country is dark and divisive. She wants to offer something different. She'd like to talk about a more positive vision for the future of the country. It would help her, if she does end up winning the election, to come in feeling like with a bit more of a mandate other than just that the country rejected Donald Trump. And that's why I'm saying that is not actually where the campaign is right now. Instead,
I want to ask a quick follow-up question, and for any listeners out there who are still undecided, I'd be curious to hear from them. So why doesn't that resonate positively with people, that she has tried repeatedly to focus on the good she will do for the country? You know, why is it that so many people, the minute there's the slightest negative news item about her, all of a sudden, you know, she's dropping in the polls? That would just be something I'd be interested in hearing from the voting populace.
Melody, thank you for your call. And I guess it was if she was going to close positive, to some degree, that was a calculation based on having a lead. You know, close positive to set up some good feeling after the election and after the victory speech. But now she feels on the defensive again, and the campaign staff, John Podesta and everybody, feel on the defensive again because of the Comey thing. So
also, it's before the Comey thing, she was sort of pivoting to spending time campaigning for down-ballot Democrats. She rallies with Senate candidates in Pennsylvania and New Hampshire. And this has turned her attention away from kind of spreading to try and help Democrats win the Senate to back just fighting for her life against Donald Trump. And I think that bigger fear for Democrats than Hillary Clinton actually losing the White House is the Democrats suffering in the Senate because of this.
Interesting. Though in terms of bringing the country together, I don't know if it matters what she does in the last days of the campaign, that is, put out this positive, stronger, together vision as opposed to try to bury Donald Trump. Maybe that all goes away as soon as she presumably wins the election. And if her victory speech next Tuesday night, if there is a victory speech next Tuesday night, starts to bring people together, starts to reach out to Trump voters, starts to really lay out that theme, and then she doesn't have to run anymore. She can govern. Obviously, there are a lot of campaigns within governing for particular bills and other things, but I don't know if it matters if she does it today and tomorrow, as long as she starts doing it next Tuesday. I don't know that people are going to remember what she did on, you know, November 3rd.
I think you're right. The big moment that people remember is her speech on a week from today. But all of this, what else is the other thing that's going to come flooding back is this. She's going to enter office if she wins with this ongoing FBI inquiry hanging over her, hanging over some of her top aides. If the Democrats don't win back the Senate and the Republicans in the House, she's going to have a hard time achieving. I mean, you talk about governing, how, like, what's she going to focus on that she can actually pass and get through? I think there's going to be, like, Trump will, I don't know how fast that movement's going to disappear. She will have a lot of work to do uniting the country. And I think that her own high unfavorables and these ongoing email investigations will be going right with her to Washington.
By the way, do you have any indication before you go that Obamacare premiums going up an average 25% is more important politically at this moment than the Comey letter to Congress?
It's a good question. It kind of got lost in the shuffle. That was another, like, last week, we had bad news about Obamacare, questions about the Clinton Foundation and how Bill Clinton was potentially leveraging the foundation for personal gain with coming out of the WikiLeaks. These are all problems that she's going to have to deal with, and they kind of got shut down because of this news that Comey dropped on Friday. I think this is all stuff that she's going to have to deal with going in. It's not going to get any easier for her after November 8th.
Annie Carney, covering the Clinton campaign for Politico. Annie, thank you so much.
Thanks.